This is the NBC Theater. From the NBC Theater in Hollywood, a full-hour production based on one of the most engaging stories yet to flow from the pen of England's Rebecca West. It's a story entitled, There Is No Conversation, and it has wit and charm and technical fireworks, and it should be important to those who have time for comedy. At least that's how we see it. The adaptation is by Clarice A. Ross of NBC. As intermission commentator, we are proud to have the distinguished American authoress, Catherine Ann Porter. Miss Porter's commentary was transcribed in New York earlier this week. Here, then, There Is No Conversation by Rebecca West.
There is no such thing as conversation. It's an illusion. There are intersecting monologues, that's all. No real communication takes place. I'm talking of times when life is being lived, not when it's being talked about, not when the intellect is holding the field. Then, of course, ideas can be formulated, can be passed from one mind to another, but not when one is really living. Then there is no conversation. Nothing ever demonstrated to me more effectively that such is the case than the story which was unraveled to me not long ago, beginning on a September afternoon in the Champs-Élysées, when I met the Marquis de Sevenac. Etienne is 50 and obsessed with the desire to remain perpetually young. Indeed, he should appear young. His skin is smooth, his eyes bright, his body slim and straight, his hair dark. Yet age clings about him like a separate entity, unconnected with appearance. Still, I cannot be unkind to him, so when I meet him, I'm insincerely agreeable. That's why I avoid meeting him. But on this particular afternoon, I couldn't avoid him, and he begged me to come with him to his flat. So evident and so terrible were his distress and his urgency that I went.
My dear, I must talk to you.
I really can't understand why you insisted on my coming here.
I wanted you to look at my pictures.
Your pictures? Surely I've seen them often enough.
But you are seeing them for the last time. They're sold.
What?
Yes, sold. Every last one. The Toulouse-Lautrec, the Monet, the Tour Noirs, everything. They will be taken away tomorrow. I'm a ruined man. I've nothing left. I must give up this flat.
But I don't understand. You had plenty.
Americans. Oh, my dear, you are English. Your husband is an American. You know American women. You have always told me they were civilized.
They are.
I will tell you. I will show you they are not. Wait. One moment. I will tell my men not to disturb us. Guillaume, Guillaume, je ne vois pas personne, tu comprends? Oh, my dear. It's such a consolation to tell you all this. Began last Easter. I was very lonely, very unhappy. A charming friend of mine had gone to spend a year in the Argentine, and I must always have a woman friend, someone to give me sympathy, someone to whom I can be tender. And in that state of loneliness, I met a woman named Mrs. Salle, Nancy Salle. It was at a luncheon in the flat below. This Mrs. Salle was not at all beautiful, not elegant, and in addition, she was, oh, quite old, perhaps 45. I should have been warned by her lack of elegance, but I felt pity for her, and I was at the mercy of my loneliness.
Why, yes, I've known Norrie Thompson for years, ever since I was a girl. We grew up in the same town.
Indeed. That is most interesting. And where was that? Mm-hmm.
Why, in Seattle.
Seattle? Do you know, we French, we find the names of your American towns so hard, so unyielding. The name of a town should suggest something soft and beautiful, like a woman.
I don't think that's ever occurred to me, Mr. Oh, Marquis,
Etienne de Cernac.
Oh, yes. I'm afraid I have trouble with names here. I never learned any French.
Oh, but I could teach you. There is so much I would like to teach you. About France, about Paris.
Yeah, I suppose so.
You've never been here before?
No, you see, my late husband, Mr. Sarle, didn't care for travel.
Oh, but that was selfish of him, to keep you from so many glories.
Oh, no, it wasn't that. It was just that he was quite old. He was over 70 when he died.
70? Oh, I see.
What do you see, Marquis?
Oh, nothing, my dear Mrs. Sarle. I hope you will give me the privilege, after luncheon, of driving you back to your hotel. My car's waiting.
Why, that's real kind.
Where are you staying?
At the Ritz.
Ah, the Ritz.
Well, they told me that was the only place.
I seldom go there. But, as it happens, I stopped there for a cocktail only yesterday afternoon. Oh, it would have given me such pleasure to see you, had I only known you then.
Oh, but I never go into the bar.
Oh, you don't drink?
Yes, but not there. I don't feel quite at home there. I don't dare go in. Everybody's so well-dressed and sure of themselves.
At the Ritz? Oh, Mrs. Sarle. Oh, I feel that you and I must know each other much better. Do not think me presumptuous, but I must beg of you to lunch with me tomorrow. Imagine it, my dear. Afraid to go into the Ritz bar. That horrible, cheap showplace. No refinement, no taste. Well, I was overcome with pity and tenderness. It was pathetic to think of how little of life she could ever have seen. And yet, there was something in her eyes, those extraordinary blue eyes, which told of an immense appetite for life. She would have adored to be somebody, poor little thing. Her heart was crying out for love and adventure. And I was resolved that I would help her, give her some of the things that she had never had. We lunched at Armenonville, and...
We don't go in for these outdoor tables and things at home.
Oh, that's a shame. I believe every woman has a little of the shepherdess in her.
I don't see anybody looking like a shepherdess around here.
It was a figure of speech and a poor one.
Now, that one over there, she certainly is fashionable. Don't you think so, Marquis?
Yes, if you care for Molyneux design.
Oh, you seem to know a lot about a lot of things.
Well, perhaps we may say I have had the opportunity of learning.
Yes, I was wondering about that. About you, I mean.
Oh, there's nothing to wonder about me. I am the Marquis de Sarnac and a very simple man.
What else?
I don't understand.
Well, I mean, what business are you in? What do you do for a living?
Oh, I have my little income. It is sufficient.
You mean you don't do anything?
Oh, I do not deserve such a description. In Paris, my dear Mrs. Sarle, there is always something fascinating to do. I keep in touch with the worlds of art, music, literature. And I have my own small collection of pictures. I have my dear friends, the de Montaigne, the Draguignan, the Saint-Cyr.
All of those? Oh, I think it's wonderful, Marquis, the way you can pronounce those names.
Poor creature. I was so anxious to give her happiness. I did everything I could for her. And out of my knowledge of the life that she hungered for, I was able to give and give and give. And I gave without stint.
Now, what did you say was the name of this place?
This is Chanel, madame. And now, monsieur le marquis?
Mon petit coco, for my sake, dress this lady.
Such a very great pleasure. I have brought some of our loveliest models, only for madame to see the sort of thing. Just by afterwards, naturally, we shall design original gowns.
Oh, say now, that one's pretty, that red one.
Not red, madame.
There are, I believe, certain shades more becoming to the particular delicacy of your own coloring, my dear Mrs. Sarle.
Now, really, Marquis, it was sure kind of you to have this lunch party for me.
You enjoying it?
You sure do things right.
Oh, you're too kind, my dear. But I believe I may say that there is no one in Paris who is not happy to receive my invitations.
Well, I should think so. Now, that man at the other end of the table there...
The Comte de Montaigne? Oh, he's charmed by you.
The Comte de Montaigne. Why, do you know, Marquis, everybody here but me has a title.
The Comte is charmed by you, and I... You must permit me to say, my dear Mrs. Salle, I find you adorable. It was the day after, I remember, that I made my two mistakes, that I put myself doubly in her power. I was waiting for her, as usual, in her hotel sitting room before luncheon, when I noticed on top of the writing desk a toy railroad engine, very nicely finished, made of steel and about 12 inches long. And it occurred to me that perhaps my poor little Nancy was a mother. Of course, she would never speak of her children. Oh, that might appear her, make her appear less romantic. As I was smiling over this, she came in. Oh, I assure you, my heart turned over. She was looking so pathetically old.
I didn't mean to keep you waiting. I had a busy morning.
Oh, do not think of it, my dear. I've been enjoying my aperitif. I see you've been buying toys.
Toys?
Yes. That engine.
That? That's not a toy. That's a scale model. Oh. That cost $1,000, that did.
Oh, really?
Pretty dear for a toy. And what it stands for is going to cost me dearer still.
Oh, I trust I have not made a stupid error.
This is a new type of locomotive we're putting on the line. And I'm not sure about it. I'm just not sure.
But now I truly do not understand. What have you to do with railways?
What have I to do with railways?
Yes, but this interests me extraordinarily. I really would like to know.
You mean you don't know?
No, I don't.
Don't you know Mr. Sarl was president of the Southwest and West South?
No, I did not know, and it makes me so happy. But now there's another link between us as well as my love for you. My dear, I too am concerned with an American railway.
Oh, you are? But how?
How? I hold $500,000 worth of stock in an American railway, the Saint Louis and Los Angeles. Oh. I put every penny of my inheritance into it in 1911.
1911? That was the Watkins holding. My, you've made some money since then.
My dear, you have such a strange look about you. What is it?
Why, I just remembered these roses. You sent them, and I haven't thanked you for them yet.
Oh, how tender you are, looking at the flowers. But come, let us go to lunch at once. I'm going to ask you to do me a favor this afternoon. I'm going to ask you to come to my flat and look at my pictures. Thus, in a moment, by telling her of my railway stock, I put into her hands the weapon by which she has destroyed my life. And as if that were not enough, I then allowed her to mistake my pity for the same love that she felt for me.
It's a nice place you got here, Marquis.
Oh, please, please, my dear. We're such close friends. Will you not call me Etienne?
All right, Etienne.
Yes, I'm comfortable here in my own way. For a long time, I had a rather charming house in the Faubourg Saint-Germain. And that was during my marriage.
Oh, you were married?
Long ago, yes. Tragically, tragically, it had to end. But she, too, she was a magnificent woman. I've been so fortunate during my life. I've known so many magnificent women. The most charming, the most beautiful. And now you, my Nancy.
You were saying how you happened to leave the house.
Oh, yes, yes, of course. It was because I was planning to write a book on my journeys through Syria. Anatole France then lived in this street, and he had promised to help me with it. He did not keep his promise, but he did help me to obtain this Renoir.
Who are those women supposed to be?
Peasant women. Notice how wonderfully his genius has caught the curves of their bodies. How soft. How inviting. Yes, you see, it was a warm day like this one, and they're all resting. Nancy, my dear, will you not come and sit on the sofa beside me? Do you know? That affair, at moments, it was quite charming. I had the joy of teaching her so much. All she could possibly learn about civilized relations between men and women. I even got her to understand a little about subtlety, to grasp the nature of finesse. Oh, it was delightful to see her blossoming like a flower. Not a very beautiful flower, it is true, but such as it was, in a full state of blossom. Oh, but she stayed in Paris too long. Months went by. I ask you, can a man go on being kind forever? It was becoming an annoyance. And just then, I fell in love with the most delicious woman in the world, a beautiful young girl. And then, how the train of my generosity dragged on me. Even an engagement to dine with Nancy was too heavy an added link to the chain. My dear, I hardly know how to tell you.
Yes, Etienne.
An uncle of mine has fallen very ill, an elderly man. I have been urgently asked to come to his villa. You understand? I will be unable to dine with you tonight.
Oh,
you do understand, of course.
Yes, of course.
Oh, I knew you would. But, my dear, but you're not listening to me. Oh, my poor Nancy, are you ill?
I don't know.
Oh, but you look so strangely. You will see me tomorrow.
Tomorrow? No, tomorrow I'm going to Carlsbad to do a cure.
But there is no one at Carlsbad now.
There will be after tomorrow. I'll be there.
I see. Of course. I understand. Do you know? I nearly burst out crying. To go to Carlsbad in the middle of June. Oh, the poor thing. She was trying to apply the finesse that I had taught her. When a man seems to tire of you, don't pursue him. Let him pursue you. As clumsy as that. But only consider my distress. When after she had been gone a few days, I got a letter asking me quite crudely and stupidly if I loved her. It was incredible. It was a business letter. It might have been discussing the matter of a woman's summer rental of a villa one was preparing to let. Then, following the first letter, a second, even worse. Well, naturally, I didn't answer them. I simply wanted the whole thing to come to an end as quickly as possible. A fortnight after she left for Carlsbad, the most unimaginable horror occurred in this very room. With the divine young girl of whom I spoke, I had prospered as well as I could have hoped. So well that she had promised to come to my flat to see my pictures that very evening. I was awaiting her, eagerly. I had prepared everything so carefully.
Ne vous inquiétez pas, monsieur le marquis, tout est prêt.
Ah, les fleurs, Guillaume, les fleurs, comme Yvette les adore, et surtout dans la chambre à coucher.
Entendu, monsieur le marquis, entendu.
Bien, et je ne suis pas à la maison que pour mademoiselle Yvette, pour personne d'autre, personne, tu comprends?
Parfaitement, monsieur le marquis.
Ouh, la voilà, ne la fais pas attendre.
Mais oui, monsieur le marquis, je m'en vais.
Where's the Marquis? I want to see him right away.
This is impossible.
Je suis désolé, madame, mais monsieur le Marquis
n'est pas... Oh, talk English, will you? I've got to see him right away.
Mais madame, je vous assure que
monsieur
le Marquis
n'est
pas...
What do you think you are doing here?
You...
What are you saying? What do you want?
Tell me.
What do you want?
Do you care for me or don't you?
What? What is it that you are saying?
Listen, you've got to tell me. Do you care for me or don't you?
Care for you?
Can't you understand? I'm asking you, do you love me?
Guillaume!
Answer. Will you answer?
No. Of course I do not love you. Go away.
You mean it?
How dare you come here in such a way? Have you gone mad? Now, will you go away?
You don't love me, but don't you care for me? Haven't you any feeling for me at all?
No, none. Nothing. You are nothing to me. You are less than nothing. Go away! Her eyes left my face and seemed to be looking at something over my shoulder. An expression I could not understand passed over her face, and she was gone. Oh, you can believe I was shattered. When Yvette arrived, my evening with her was ruined. And then, within 10 days, I was a pauper. The stock in the St. Louis and Los Angeles Railroad, all of it, reduced to waste paper.
But how do you know that she was...
She did it. I learned it all from one of my uncles who is a banker in London. It was a most complicated operation on the New York Stock Exchange. Now, I'm ruined. Oh, my dear, you're cold.
No.
Oh, yes, but you are. Oh, you're shaking all over. Shall I call Guillaume to light the fire?
No, Etienne. I'm not cold. It's only that I'm sorry. He had bent over me and put his fingers on my hand. Looking at him, I saw how he was changed. Now he seemed insincere because his concern for me was nothing compared with his profound and bitter dissatisfaction with the whole of life. But why was it that I was filled with a miserable chill there in Etienne de Sevenac's room? It could be nothing in the place, nor the moment, since I'd felt this way before in quite other places and other moments. The feeling seemed always to be provoked by any consideration of the soul of Etienne de Sevenac, which was really too much like a desert.
From Hollywood, the NBC Theater is bringing you a dramatization of There Is No Conversation by Rebecca West. If you are interested in supplementing your enjoyment of these NBC Theater productions with home study under college supervision, be sure to listen to the announcement at the close of this program. And now, our intermission commentator, Catherine Ann Porter.
Rebecca West begins the story from which this play is made with statement, "There is no such thing as conversation. It is an illusion. There are intersecting monologues, that is all. We speak. We spread around us with sounds, with words, an emanation from ourselves." It is as if she began a thesis with an exact statement of what she means to do, to show that most of the trouble between human beings comes of our unwillingness to listen to each other, that we fail to understand each other because we're so bound up in our own imaginative view of other personalities, our own wish that they may be what we wish them to be. We miss entirely the real being and invent for ourselves their characters, personalities. Above all, we interpret their acts, looks, gestures, words, in ways that will confirm to us our visions of what we wish them to be. It is a fatal sort of thing, as this story shows clearly. Talk. Surely human beings are meant to communicate with each other, and there are times when words might really help. And there are human beings who do say the right thing at the right moment because they wish each other to know the truth as well as they are able to speak it. Miss West does not deal with such people. In this story, she shows a man who never had any notion of reality, a woman who had the most mistaken sense of reality, and a second woman, the divorced wife, who faced the humiliating fact that she had loved a cad. "I had wanted her to tell me," she says, "that she too had found it possible to love a cad." But the American woman financier had taken it for granted from the beginning that he was a cad, had not been surprised by it, had only been surprised at the end, and that perhaps he was better than she had thought. In any case, he was as good as she was, which is not saying too much. Miss West is a magnificent reporter. That is to say, she tells a straight story without taking liberties with the mind of the reader. She never says, draw this conclusion or that, but says instead that here are some human beings I have known in my time. Strange creatures, no doubt, but still human. Still in spite of their distortions, their stupidities, their blindness, deafness, dumbness. Have a claim on your sympathies. They did at least behave to each other as well as they knew how. Or if they committed crimes against each other, as the American woman did against her enemy Mary Martin and her enemy Etienne de Sevenac, it was because she was unconscious, because no one had ever warned her, ever told her better. Even the divorced wife, slave of love and her own bad taste, disliked her, at least for the right reason. Her sin was indifference, not knowing, not caring, and that is always the real sin.
Thank you, Miss Porter. Our radio version of There Is No Conversation will continue from Hollywood after a brief pause for station identification.
I adore people who have strong feelings. That is why when I got home to New York, I was haunted by the strongest desire to meet Nancy Saar. I wanted to know a woman who could feel such intense emotion, such love, and such hatred. I had no luck in my search for her until just before Christmas. Then, at a dinner party, I was seated next to a tiresome bore of an old man. I hardly listened to him until he began to talk about railroads, which were apparently his line in life.
Yes, indeed, I knew them all. Hill, Harriman, Patton, big railroaders, remarkable men. And, of course, old Walter Saar was no slouch either.
Did you say Walter Saar?
Sure, president of the Southwest and West South.
Did you know his wife? Did you know Nancy Saar?
Sure I did, and Nancy Gott, and Nancy McFarlane, and Nancy King.
Who are they?
Same as Nancy Saar, and not changed very much in the process either.
You mean she's been married 3 times?
That's what she has, and pushed her first 2 husbands along something wonderful, too. Before she was done with them, they were both pulling down maybe $50,000 a year. But that was no good to Nancy. Real money's what she's interested in.
I see.
Well, she got it all right. Old Sarl died on her 3 years after they were married. Now she's running the whole show herself.
Tell me, what's she like, this Mrs. Sarl? Is she pretty?
Well, now, to tell the truth, I don't know why any man ever look at Nancy for pleasure. She's just kind of little and stocky and nothing much. Oh, but mighty pretty eyes, though. Mighty pretty blue eyes.
Is she... Would you say she was a good sort of person?
Never knew her better. She's a grand woman. And when it comes to running the railroad, well, I'd hate to be in a fight with her. That's all.
How about that business last summer with the St. Louis and Los Angeles failed? Did she have anything to do with that?
Anything to do with it? Why, she swung that axe with her own hands. Yes, ma'am, that was Nancy, all right. Well, we were all laughing about it just the other night.
Oh, you see her often?
Oh, sure, old George Parsons and Senator Saul and I were out to her place around a week ago. Had a grand time.
Out to her place?
Oh, sure, yeah. She lives here in New York all week. Goes down to Wall Street every day just like a man. But weekends, she goes to a house she's got way out on the end of Long Island. Place called Cedar Corner.
Cedar Corner, on the farthest end of Long Island. I had a distant acquaintance who had a house there. And I improved the acquaintance until it brought me an invitation for a weekend, during which I met Nancy Saar. A woman as placid, as ordinary, and as likable as anyone in the world. She seemed to like me, too. And helped by my prodding, our friendship grew. until my husband and I again found ourselves guests at Cedar Corner, this time in Nancy's house. That evening there was a big party, and during it, Nancy asked me to come upstairs with her. Her evening shoes were hurting her feet, and she wanted to change.
Oh, gosh, my feet. Oh, you mind just letting me sit a couple of minutes, honey?
Of course not.
Oh, boy, these feet of mine. All the trouble I had fitting a lot of shoes in Paris, and when I turn around, there isn't a pair of them I can use. Oh. Well, I guess I better get into something, get back downstairs, though.
No, no, let's sit for a minute. I like this room.
Well, I'm real glad to hear that.
It reminds me of a room in my old home in England. Of course, that hasn't been my home for many years. Before I came to America, I lived in France for quite a long time.
Oh, that's so? Well, it's a nice place for a visit. Don't know as I'd want to live there.
Perhaps you might have met some of my old friends while you were there. Felice de Leon?
No, I don't think I ran into her.
Perhaps the Marquis de Savenac?
Did you say de Savenac?
Yes, Etienne de Savenac.
Fellow around 50, with a white face and black hair?
Yes, that would be Etienne. Do you know him?
Well, I'll say I do. What do you know about that? Fancy you knowing that fella. What? You know, I'll tell you something. He nearly had me making a fool of myself. But I got out of it in time. Whew, it was a close shave, though.
What do you mean? What happened?
Well, I don't mind telling you. It's all over now, but on account of it, I pretty nearly lost the dearest thing in the world to me. Kind of a long story, honey. Hope it won't bore you, will it?
No, no, not at all. Go on, please.
Well, last summer, I made up my mind I needed a vacation. And maybe I ought to take a look at Europe. See, one of the boys I got around the office worked out a real swell trip for me. But I just got to Paris and stayed there. I ran around looking at the town, and I kept falling over all kinds of folks I knew, from Chicago and Denver and Seattle and all over. One woman I'd known ever since I was a kid. See, my mother used to go around and help out at her place when they had company. Well, I went up to lunch at her place one day, and there was this middle-aged chap. He kept trying to butt into the conversation between Norrie Thompson's son and daughter, just like he was one of them. Finally, they razzed him so much he had to shut up. And that was when he latched onto me. I remember he kept throwing his title at me.
The Marquis of Nac.
Oh, yeah, sure. I never had the time to learn any of this French lingo.
Well, but you should let me teach you. It would be so great a pleasure to teach such a charming lady.
Well, that's real kind of you, Marquis, but I guess we both got other things to do.
Ah, but in Paris there's time. One can learn to live here, Mrs. Salle.
That's funny. I always thought I was living where I was.
Oh, you have never been in Paris?
That's right. Walter, that was my husband. He didn't hold with traveling much.
Oh, but how selfish to keep you away from us.
Yeah, when a man's over 70, you can't blame him if he don't feel like gallivanting.
70?
Well, what's wrong with that? You'll get to be 70 yourself someday.
Without doubt, Mrs. Salle, but I am glad to say not for a great many years. Now, Mrs. Salle, I must tell you that I cannot live unless you allow me a great privilege.
Well, I don't see why I should kill you off. What can I do for you?
My dear Mrs. Salle, I must beg of you. Do me the honor to have luncheon with me tomorrow. Just the two of us, alone.
You know, I had that fella figured out all wrong at the beginning. He looked like he was trying so hard to put himself over. Well, I figured my old friend Norrie Thompson must have spilled to him who I was and how much money I had, and now he was acting like he'd fallen for me. I went to lunch with him, though, and I will say for that fella, he certainly did know how to give a person a good time. Say, Marquis, look at that one over there. What do you call that?
I know her. She's dressed by Molyneux, but she has no knowledge of how to wear her clothes. Oh, she might as well have had some little seamstress at home.
Now, that's a funny thing for a man to say.
Ah, but I am interested in many things.
That's so? Well, just what are you interested in?
At the moment, only in you.
I take it you're not a family man.
Oh, but I have a large family. There is my cousin Amélie, the Duchesse de Draguignan, my uncle Léon, the Duc de Federoville, my cousin Philippe, the Marquis de Saint-Cyr,
no, and... that's enough, that's enough. I got to hand it to you, Marquis. You really know how to throw those titles around. By this time, I really thought I had his number. He was just one of those frauds who hang around try to land dumb Americans by shooting phony titles at them. Half the time, they're nothing but shoeshine boys. So every time he handed me a title, I looked him straight in the eye, just to let him know I was onto him and no funny business. But that didn't clear him out. He sure acted like he enjoyed hanging around. So I kept kidding him along till I could find out what his game really was. Now, look here, Marquis, it don't make a bit of difference what I wear. You didn't have to drag me into this, what's the name of it?
This is Chanel, madame. And now, Monsieur le Marquis?
My dearest Mrs. Salle, anyone with such charm, such beauty, should take fullest advantage of them. Mon petit coco, for my sake, dress this lady.
Such a very great pleasure.
Now, listen, I don't want to feel like Grant's tomb. Who are you dolling me up for, Marquis? Well, all right. Let me see that red satin thing. That's not too bad. All right, George, what'd you find out?
I checked up on every name and title you gave me, Mrs. Sarr. They're all real.
All real? Mm-hmm. Listen, if you haven't got this straight, George, I'm in the market for a new secretary.
Mm-mm, they're gilt-edged, every one of them.
Maybe you're right at that. That Duchess dame, she sure is too ugly to be a crook. How about Etienne?
He's right in there with the rest of them. First families of France, all that kind of stuff.
Well, I'll be hornswoggled. Now I can't figure this out at all. I kept right on trying to figure it. And then I thought I had it. I decided Etienne was after a rich American wife after all. He was maybe a black sheep who'd lost all his dough, and now he was trying to make a comeback. Sure, that was it. And then something happened that just knocked me silly. One day when he called for me to go to lunch, I'd had a pretty bad morning. There was the deuce and all of work to do, and on top of that, my so-called brainy fella back in New York had sent me a model of a locomotive that... well, it made me mad just to look at it. I was so sure it was wrong and not worth wasting time and money on. When I got into the sitting room, there was Etienne looking at this thing. And the first crack out of his mouth nearly blew me up.
I see you've been buying toys.
Toys?
Yes, that engine.
Ha! That's no toy. That's a model. That cost $1,000, that did. Pretty dear for a toy. And what it stands for is going to cost me dearer still.
Oh? I trust I have not made a stupid error.
This is a new type locomotive we're putting on the line, and I'm not sure about it. I'm just not sure.
But I truly do not understand. What have you to do with railways?
What? What did you say?
But this interests me extraordinarily. I truly would like to know.
You don't know?
Yeah.
You mean... you don't know who I am? You haven't any idea?
No, I do not.
You don't know that I'm Walter Sarrell's widow, the president of the Southwest and West South? You don't know I run the concern now?
No, but I am so happy to hear it. My dear, I too am concerned with an American railway.
You?
Yes. I hold $500,000 worth of stock in an American railway, the San Luis and Los Angeles United. I realized my entire inheritance in 1911... there was a large block of stock free at that time, and on very good advice, I put into it everything I had.
1911. Old man Watkins had just died. That was his holding. Well, you have made some money since then.
My dear, You have such a strange look about you. But what is it?
Why, I just remembered these roses. You sent them, and I haven't remembered to thank you for them yet. I leaned over those fool flowers, thinking maybe for Pete's sake they'd give me some kind of an answer. Here was this fella didn't even know how rich I was. So there went my idea of the poor aristocrat running after the millionaires. And to make it still funnier, it turned out he was rich himself. Plenty rich. So what was he after? What in tarnation was he after? And then, all of a sudden, it came over me. He was after me. Why, I thought to myself, the poor old fool, that's kind of sweet of him. I was so flummoxed, I guess I must have given him a look like I'd fallen for him, too. So he said for me to come up and see his pictures. Well, we started going around like a couple of sweethearts. And you know, it was kind of nice. I felt real kind toward him, as if I mustn't let him come to any harm. I had to stay in Paris much longer than I wanted to. The French government wanted to give us some railway reorganizing work, and I had to stick around and see what was in it for us. And with Etienne around, it wasn't so bad. And then I got some news that just made me feel like a dog.
Mrs. Sarle.
Oh, George, can't you see I'm on the telephone? And don't take any palaver. Just tell him to see
our
lawyers.
Pardon me, Mrs. Sarle.
All right, George. Now, what do you want?
This cable just came in, and I knew you'd want to read it right away.
Oh, if one of those dumb vice presidents of mine has got himself...
Read it.
What is it?
Read it.
Mary Lonergan, seriously ill, all preparations complete. Can we expect you in New York at once? George, did you read this?
Why do you think I came tearing in here?
After all these years, that prissy-mouthed, hawk-eyed, antiquated old toothache. She won't die. I know she won't die.
She's nearly 80.
You're telling me. But that doesn't mean a thing, George, not a thing. I've waited too many years for her to die. All these years with my fingers itching, and that clause in Walter's will saying I couldn't do a thing till Mary was gone. She won't die. She wouldn't do anybody that much of a favor. Now, all this about Mary Lonergan will take some explaining. Walter, my husband, and Tom Lonergan used to be partners. Then Walter found out Tom was a crook. They split up. We got our line, and Tom took the St. Louis and Los Angeles. Oh, Walter could have closed him out 25 years ago. But he wouldn't do it. He wouldn't do it out of respect for Tom Lonergan's wife, Mary. That held after Tom was dead, and it held after Walter was dead, in his will. But I got ready. I had my folks in Washington all ready to hand the goods to the Railway Commission. I put senators in every state legislature their lines went through. I bought 4 newspapers in the West and Middle West and told them to stand by to tear the sky down. I got enough of their shares to start a panic on the market any time. I had all that. And Mary Lonergan wouldn't die. She wouldn't die. And now, here she was dying. And I wasn't going to be able to move, because the minute I did, I was going to ruin Etienne. All right, all right. No, don't tell those editors a blame thing. Just tell them that story I told them they were going to have to spill someday may come through any minute now. Oh, what am I going to do? Oh, if that's Etienne de Sevenac, George, tell him that...
It's the desk downstairs. 3 more cables, Mrs.
I can't stand it, George. Have the phone shut off. Tell him not to deliver any more cables today. No, don't. Tell him what you want.
Mrs. Sarle, I can't understand you.
Well, I don't want to do anything too fast, see? Not too fast. She may get better.
Every cable looks worse.
All these years. I hated that woman so much, I guess I kept her alive hating her. I tell you, George, she won't die.
Would you just check this list of our Washington people? I want to send off something.
Don't send off anything. Not a thing. It's just possible, George, that I may go home and lay a wreath on Mary Lonergan's moth-eaten old head and forget the entire thing. It was killing. I tried to figure out how I could do what I wanted and not leave Etienne broke. And there was no way. There was just no way. My idea had been to shoot up the town, buy the St. Louis and Los Angeles stock at rock bottom after the panic, and leave the Lonergan crowd flat. And all this had to be a secret. I couldn't tip Etienne to unload his stock, or they'd have got wise. Anyway, he'd have talked. I knew that. And I wanted that line to crash like a Polack steer. Etienne had to go down with the rest of them, or I couldn't have my fun. And so, I couldn't have my fun. If he felt the way he said he did about me, I couldn't sell him up the river. Well, I was so scared to see him, I picked up and went to Carlsbad. That'll show you how bad off I was.
Mrs. Sarr?
Hmm?
Aren't you going to eat your lunch?
I guess not, George. Thanks.
Chef tells me the ham is something very special here. Now, don't you think...
Yeah, it looks fine. Just fine. I got no appetite.
If you don't mind my saying so, Mrs. Sarr, you haven't been looking well the last few days. Now, maybe a doctor might...
I don't need any doctors, and I look just like I feel, and I do mind your saying so. Listen, George... Are you sure no answers come to that last letter? The one I wrote to Etienne de Savignac?
Well, I left orders that anything that came in was to be sent right up.
And you didn't find out any more about him? You're sure he's not maybe looking for a rich wife?
Rich or any other kind. He's a Catholic and his first wife divorced him. These high society French, you know, they're pretty strict about that.
Then it must be the McCoy.
Hello. Yes? Mr. Sarl's secretary speaking.
George, I won't talk to anybody.
It's the cable office in Paris. Hello? Yes, please. Thank you.
Well?
She's dead.
Pack up, George. We're taking the next train for Paris.
Got all the cables ready in the train. Washington, the legislative committees, the papers, the brokerage house, the home office.
Who told you to do all that?
Oh, now everything's ready to say go. We do say it, don't we?
We say nothing. Not until I've paid a call. And don't mention the name Mary Lonergan. And you can call all this a rehearsal.
What are you talking about, Mrs. Sarr?
I'm talking about how maybe we're never going to mention the name Mary Lonergan again. Where's this chauffeur driving to?
Well, I told him the Ritz.
Well, tell him over. Tell him to drive to where the Marquis de Savignac lives.
But aren't you going to stop for a bath and something to eat?
I don't want anything to eat, and I've lost all interest in being clean. We went up that long avenue by the Champs-Élysées, and my heart was just yammering. I tell you, it would have killed me not to have gone for that bunch of dirty crooks on the St. Louis and Los Angeles. But I couldn't hurt Etienne. When we got to his apartment, I pretty near broke down the door. And as if everything else wasn't enough, I was hot and mad and tired and dirty. And then that butler of his wouldn't let me in.
Madame Sal.
Where's the Marquis? I want to see him right away.
Oh, je suis désolé, madame, mais monsieur
talk
le
English,
Marquis...
Talk English, will you? I've got to see him right away.
Madame, je vous assure que monsieur
oh,
Marquis...
get out of my way.
Madame!
I slammed into that flat, and in the sitting room, I found Etienne. And then it was like something happened to me. Everything came on me at once. That I was maybe going to lose the most important thing in the world to me. That maybe through all eternity, Mary Lonergan was going to have the last laugh. And it seemed like I couldn't get my voice out. And there was something funny about Etienne, too. He couldn't seem to understand anything I said.
What? What do you think you are doing here?
What
are you saying? What do you want?
Tell me.
What do you want?
Do you care for me or don't you?
What? What is it you're saying?
Listen, you've got to tell me. Do you care for me or don't you?
Care for you?
Can't you understand? I'm asking you, do you love me?
Guillaume!
Oh, answer, will you answer?
No, of course I do not love you. Go away!
You mean it?
How dare you come here in such a way? Have you gone mad? Will you go away?
You don't love me, but don't you care for me at all? Haven't you any feeling for me at all?
No, none, nothing. You are nothing to me. You are less than nothing. Go away!
And I knew it was all right. I knew whatever it had been, well, it was just some kind of foolishness. And that now there wasn't a thing between me and the St. Louis and Los Angeles. And I could have gone down on my knees and prayed and shouted and sung. I was so happy. I just stood there for a second, just looking into the golden future. Then I lit out of there and down to the car and back to the hotel and got the whole thing moving by midnight. And how it moved. Why, there never was any operation of the same size that ran that sweetly. 10 days, and we had the whole bunch of crooks right where we wanted them. And to think I was that close to losing it all. Losing everything to Mary Lonergan's ghost, just from being taken in by your friend Etienne de Sevenac. Well, I guess we're all fools once in our lives. But you knowing the fella and all, can you believe it?
Knowing Etienne? Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Here now, honey. What have you been letting me say to you that's made you so blue?
Nothing.
Now, that's not true. Why, there was something in your face for a second there. I know I've made you blue.
No, really. You could never do that. I think you're simply splendid.
Then I haven't done anything or said anything?
No, not a thing.
Well, that's swell. Guess if you're through with that glass of Tokay, maybe I better be getting downstairs to the party before that crowd starts ripping up the floorboards. You know, fellas are sure funny.
Very funny. I've told you that there is no conversation, that no one listens to what the other one says. But it appears that even the different parts of the same person do not converse, cannot tell the truth to each other. I had told myself that I wanted to hear Nancy Sal's story out of amusement, and because I adore strong feeling. Yet the truth was something else. She was right. I'd heard her story, and I was desolate because of a cry from my heart, which was not reasonable, which had not been governed by the rest of me, which is governed by reason. I had pried into Nancy Sal's story, hoping to learn that a certain part of my own life had been something other than an accident, a bad dream. I had believed that she did what she did out of love. I had wanted to hear her describe and justify that love, to disclose some detail corresponding to my own story and prove to me that it was inevitable for a woman to love a cat. I wanted her to lay something before me, which I realized I had never ceased to seek. Something which would make it right and reasonable that I should have spent 10 years of my life with my first husband, who was Etienne de Sevenac.
I wanted her somehow to prove to me that something about this anguished sacrifice of my best years to a cheap and empty man made all of it worthwhile. Some insane part of me feels that there is somewhere, if only I could lay my hands on it, a sanction for my life in that miserable and fruitless time, transcending all the claims of these later years, while I've been building up a tranquil home for my second husband and children. My insanity had been listening for a miracle to prove its sane. Nancy Sam and I walked together through the corridor and down the stairs, arm in arm. I had felt myself her friend, but I knew that I could never like her as I'd liked her before, now that I knew she had ruined Etienne, not out of love, but out of indifference. Yet, Etienne means nothing to me. He means nothing at all to me.
You have been listening to There Is No Conversation, an NBC Theater production of the story by Rebecca West. If you wish to increase your knowledge and appreciation of literature, we suggest that you might enjoy the college-supervised courses now being offered in connection with the NBC Theater. For full information, write to NBC Theater in care of one of the following universities or colleges: the University of Louisville, Louisville, Kentucky; University of Tulsa, Tulsa, Oklahoma; Kansas State Teachers College, Pittsburgh, Kansas; Washington State College, Pullman, Washington; the University of Arizona, Tucson, Arizona; Texas College of Arts and Industries, Kingsville, Texas; and Brooklyn College, Brooklyn, New York. You also have a chance to win a set of the famous Encyclopedia Britannica. Several of the universities and colleges offering these courses are giving the Encyclopedia as prizes to the students doing the best work. Enroll in a supervised course, and you may be one of the fortunate ones to win the Encyclopedia Britannica. Be with us at the NBC Theater next week for a dramatization of Angel Pavement by J.B. Priestley, and the following week for a radio version of Howard's End by E.M. Forster. There Is No Conversation was adapted for the NBC Theater by Clarice A. Ross, and is from a book of four short novels by Rebecca West entitled The Harsh Voice. Our intermission commentator was Catherine Ann Porter, whose commentary was recorded. In today's cast, Norma Varden was the narrator, Ramsey Hill was Etienne, Georgia Backus was Nancy, Nan Boardman was the couturiere, Rolf Sedan was the old man, William Lally was George. Your announcer, Don Stanley. The director of the NBC Theater is Andrew C. Love. This program came to you from Hollywood. What's on NBC today? There's more great drama in store for you today on Theater Guild on the Air. Elizabeth Taylor and Walter Houston will star in Thornton Wilder's prize-winning play, Our Town. And immediately preceding Theater Guild, tune for another exciting caper in The Adventures of Sam Spade. Both great shows in NBC's Sunday lineup of stellar entertainment. You're tuned for the stars on NBC.